live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
The day the Lord has made, and I am grateful and glad within it because we get to be grounded in fact. Our state, this state of Washington, is being absolutely decimated economically and from a perspective of lives with Jay Inslee's lockdown diktat. One of my listeners shared with me the COVID death numbers in King County. They were at one per day. I've made a prediction, and this prediction is going to come true. This is not going to be done in terms of the Seattle Media 5. Seattle Times, of course, absolute, completely turned the corner. Seattle Times is a useless organization, save two or three really great writers. And I wonder how long they can stay there. I imagine they're near retirement. I do. I wonder how long they can stay and continue to write at that organization. The Seattle Times has basically become the stranger. And in terms of the COVID coverage, they are utter optionists for the Inslee administration and for people who want to scare us with ridiculous disinformation and half-truths at best. Como News, Q13, Cairo 7, King 5, the remainder of the Seattle Media 5 have been an embarrassment, utter embarrassment in relation to the COVID. They refuse to talk about the death rate lowering. They refuse to talk about one death per day in King County. None of them have been willing to apply any degree, and I mean any degree of skepticism to Jay Inslee's lockdown diktats. Candidates have not been able to hold actual rallies or go door to door. Jay Inslee's campaigning to Seattle. They love the authority from the governor's office. They love seeing businesses limited. Seattle voters love it because this is to them.
Neighbors we talked to are very concerned.
Things are moving rapidly. We want the testing facilities here, but we also need good communication occurring.
I'm so disappointed and horrified.
This could be our reality next school year because we don't have a vaccine in place likely for another 12 months.
Stop this terrible pandemic.
The pandemic, in terms of population, has a net infection rate of 0.12%. We're going to talk in a moment with an independent data analyst who's done brilliant work. His work is checked. There is a community of independent looking at publicly sourced information and data, putting up their theses, and then there is an independent peer review system. As their peers, other independent data analysts make suggestions, provide criticism. They're reaching some consensus, some good, important consensus. We're going to talk with Kyle Lamb coming up, and I'll share with you some of the work he did yesterday, which is remarkable, utterly remarkable, in terms of the COVID versus the shutdown and the lives taken. We'll get to that in a second. There continues to be an absolute push of what I would refer to as, I think I was the first to call it panic porn. I don't think I'm supposed to say that anymore. So fear-mongering, fear-pushing, that's around kids. The data, this is so important for everybody to understand. Around kids, there is no more discussion. I watch it. Everybody admits. The evidentiary data is this. There are 22 countries that have opened their schools, 22. There's still not a single recorded case of a child passing the COVID to adults. There are some cases, two of them, of kids passing the virus to one another. kids are at 4 to 5 times more rare to die from the flu than they are the COVID flu, the just traditional influenza. They are more likely to die being hit by lightning if you're below the age of 15. If you are keeping your kids inside all the time, having them walk around with a rubber umbrella above their head at all times to avoid being struck by lightning, then please put them in woke masks. Then you're being consistent. Despite that, Chris Rakedal, the so-called superintendent of public schools, he's actually the boss of government schools. Please vote for Maya Espinosa today. Please get your ballot in a drop box. Replace Chris Rakedal. Despite all this, the media is reporting that some Puget Sound schools are prepping for in-class learning this fall.
Charles Wright Academy and Life Christian Academy, all in Pierce County, all independent schools, all saying they plan on opening full-time with on-site learning.
And so they'll have to make sure that they can abide by all of the safety precautions and do a really good job of making sure that kids and teachers are safe.
That means desks 6 feet apart, masks, temperature checks, the same guidelines that public schools with hybrid learning plans in place, with some online and some on-site teaching. But many county health directors are saying there should be no on-site learning yet.
And I think the challenge now, though, is that it's with the way our cases are going and how widespread the COVID-19 infections are in our community, that I just don't think it's safe for us to have the kids in school in person.
Gibberish. Utter gibberish. Utter gibberish. Literal gibberish means nothing. Cases mean nothing. Nothing. Death rates matter. Kids are not dying from the COVID. There's been maybe 32 deaths worldwide with kids with the COVID. Who had severe underlying health conditions with the COVID worldwide. More likely to die being hit by lightning.
Do you have any authority to not allow that to happen?
Yes, I do have authority as the health officer. I have the authority to issue orders for the protection of the health of the public.
Yes, yes. Health of the public, issue orders. Yes, yes, yes. And that is from Como News. You're not protecting anybody's health with this. In fact, there are more reports of suicides of children. There's an 11-year-old, we'll get into this later in the show, out of the state of California, whose parents say killed himself because of the lockdown, or at least the lockdown contributed to it. Our family knows 4 people who've ended their lives related to this. 3 of them were teens. 3 of them were teens. One of these teens left a note describing the theft of her life from the lockdowns. That's anecdotal. On an evidentiary basis, purely evidentiary, Kyle Lamb, who's going to join us in the next segment, has done some work. Well, he's done a lot of work. One piece in particular stood out to me. It's just phenomenal. He looked at side-by-side analysis. He looked at the death from the lockdowns, and he looked at the death from the COVID, from the COVID. That's an important distinction. And the way these numbers broke out, according to Kyle, and we'll share this with you. I'll get this to Alex. We'll put it on the text line so you can see it yourself. It is on my Twitter. It's on my Facebook page. So if you take COVID-19 alone, just COVID, not with the diabetes, not with obesity, not with the comorbid factors, it kills 0.18%. Okay, 0.18 of the people. Infected net infection fatality rate. The lockdown, and this is so important, the lockdown has the deaths caused by this is 47,000 deaths. Through Kyle's analysis, the lockdown has saved 7,538 people. It has killed 47,878. So the net deaths, the net excess deaths from the lockdown is 40,340 people. Deaths from COVID compared to the lockdown numbers. Phenomenal. 80,000 from the COVID, 40,000 from the lockdown, dead. But the government is purchased, Strike is purchasing, insert has purchased, has in advance, created a contract for 6 to produce 100 million doses of a vaccine that maybe 0.18% of people, if it would even be helpful for them, it might be harmful. This is a massive scandal, massive, the largest ever in this country. And if you turn to the pages of the Seattle Times, you'll hear cases, cases, cases. You listen to the so-called community health directors, cases, cases, cases. We're going to go out a little early this hour because Kyle Lamb joins us next on the Todd Herman Show, the gentleman who put together these numbers. You'll hear that exclusively here coming up on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. Just a few more things coming up on the Todd Herman Show at AM 770 KTTH. I've been utterly fascinated to watch as independent data analysts are providing us truth and insights into what is going on with the COVID that the likes of the Seattle Media 5 refuse to touch. The New York Times is a lie fest when it comes to the COVID. They're still committed to trying to pretend that kids are dying everywhere from the COVID. Absolutely committed. The Atlantic Tracking Project, Atlantic COVID Tracking Project, our friend Dr. Andrew Boston has pointed out they continue to lie about Florida data stacking and death harvesting. It is the greatest, biggest scandal in my lifetime. And I lived through the Russia hoax. So this is important to know about and know the people who are doing this. And so it gives me great, great pleasure to welcome to the program one of these heroes that I've been talking about and did get to mention on the Rush Limbaugh Show, Kyle Lamb, data expert, data analyst, temporary COVID-19 analyst, joins us on the Todd Herman Show. Kyle, such a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be with you, Todd, and I want to thank you for that shout-out. I heard about it after it happened. A lot of people said, hey, did you know you got a call out on the Rush? I'm like, no, I was not aware of that, but thank you for passing that along. So I appreciate the recognition.
Oh, of course. And you know what? It's so funny because occasionally, like when I first filled in for Rush Limbaugh, I got notes from people who knew me in first grade. And the reach of that show is phenomenal, 60 million people. So I hope it wasn't overwhelming. But nonetheless, I'm glad to do that. Quickly tell people about what you are professionally, this ability to analyze data. And then let's get into your work around the COVID.
Yeah, I'm a jack of all trades, master of none type of guy. I went to school for radio, worked in radio for a few years, actually. Then I got into freelance writing, and then did some freelance research and data analysis, and now I'm kind of back in podcasting, and I still do some data stuff on the side. So it's kind of a little bit of everything. So I'm a podcaster, radio guy at heart, and I've always had a keen sense of data. And I mean, I was doing statistical spreadsheet type stuff like before spreadsheets existed. When I was 10 years old, I was, you know, doing columns of statistics and doing all sorts of math. So it was kind of always been my thing to look at numbers and trends. And that's how this whole thing took off for me. Just kind of looking at the numbers and just saying, something just seems off. And I dug in and have stuck with it ever since.
Yeah, it's interesting because I can tell, obviously, your facility with math, the things you can see in data that other people can't see. I've got another friend of mine, Justin Hart. I think you know Justin from the looking at the COVID-19. And you know, Justin has some training, but it's not in these numbers. He just, in politics, he became this data hound who could look at a spreadsheet and look at data and spot these trends. And it's these mathematical minds that are saving us. And I wanted to ask you, you describe yourself as a temporary COVID-19 analyst. What was it about the data that drew you in to start to want to really dig into these numbers?
Well, early on when we were hearing case fatality rates of 5%, 6%, and people, you know, saying, well, this is scary because if millions of people, millions of Americans specifically get this, you know, I remember the early estimates of 40 to 70% of America getting the virus and over 4 or 5 million people dying. And this was about the time where Italy was starting to take off and we were hearing 90% of everybody in Italy were over 50% that had died and had underlying health conditions. And that was the time for me where I'm like, well, the math doesn't work out here. If those conditions are true, then 4 million Americans are not going to die from this. And that's where I really started to dig in and watching Italy and just knowing the issues that they had in Milan with so many smokers and older folks living there and the pollution that they have in northern Italy. Things like that just didn't make sense. I'm like, look, this is bad, obviously. A lot of people are dying, but that's where the math didn't make sense. And I just really started digging in closer. And we didn't have a lot of data at that time, but I really started looking at it closer at that point in time.
So we had a similar experience because I don't have your skill with numbers. In fact, you know, when I used to work in corporate America, I had to read a book called Innumeracy so I could get really comfortable looking at spreadsheets and talking about things with people. And I can't do your granular level of work, but I had to get really good at mental math so I could have conversations about, you know, return on investment and running P&Ls so I could do that with a facility. What got me was the immediate horse trading that started to go on in terms of who got shut down and who didn't get shut down. And I studied politics and organizing and leftist organizing. And I said, wait a minute, if this is a public health emergency, you wouldn't be making the decisions this way. That's where I started to look at the big picture math and join you in then saying, wait a minute, this isn't going to kill this many people. As you sit here now and you're watching some of what's going on, I saw you had promoted a conversation between Ethical Skeptic and someone else on Twitter about this death stacking. So I want to talk about that, but I wanted to ask you, Kyle Lamb is with us, and we will I'll tweet this out. We'll make sure that people can follow you on Twitter. We'll make sure that we get you more followers for your podcast, et cetera. We'll make sure we do that. What has stood out to you as the most shocking misuse of numbers or the most shocking inconsistencies as you've been tracking this?
There are so many things, but I think the most misunderstood is just the lack of appreciation and context for who is really at risk. I know you retweeted this, and I put out, you know, if we assume an 8 times prevalence of antibodies to confirmed cases, which means total infections is about 8 times higher than confirmed cases, and that's probably a low estimate, by the way. It might be a little higher. It might be 10 or 12 times. The CDC has said 10, but if we assume it's 8, like if you're under retirement age in America right now, you've got about a 0.1%. chance of dying from this, and that's right in line with the flu. And I know the flu takes into account everybody, so it's not exact apples to apples, but the point is, like, the risk is very low. I think that is really where this has been overblown and sensationalized, in that most people simply do not have a very high risk of this, and I think that's where we're trying to educate people that, hey, this is dangerous for people that are high risk, but those people are a very small percent of the population. I think the rest of us need to get back to our lives and figure out how to protect those people. That, for me, is where I think, you know, we're really dropping the ball here.
Yeah, and I did retweet that, and I think this is so, you know, prevalent in our society. I was talking yesterday in the program about the fact that I think it's 30% of Americans believe that 9% of their fellow Americans have died from COVID. And Kyle, that would be roughly 30 million people. So people can carry these thoughts. And I know. And people can carry these thoughts. But this thought is also propelled by the media. And then there's this, that the other thing that stood out to me, and I know you've tracked this, is excess deaths outside of contact with COVID, because we can talk about the dynamic of people dying with COVID versus from COVID. And that's a conversation. It could be up to 60% of what the CDC has coded death from COVID actually being death with COVID, a far different thing. But then there's the deaths that are a direct result of the lockdown. I've seen discussions that that could be as high as 40,000 people in the United States.
Yeah, this is a very important topic for people to understand, because this allows us to know this right now. COVID-19 is being coded as liberally as any disease or virus we've ever seen in the history of mankind. Everybody that has it is being coded with it when they die. And for us to be able to figure out how liberally it's being coded, the excess deaths is a very key method. And that's just basically, for every calendar week, the CDC has a threshold at what point so many deaths would be considered more than normal, okay? Like an abnormal number of deaths. And for this time of year, it's about 54,000 people dying in a week in the United States. Well, so that means every death over 54,000 is considered excess. And so what we're looking at here is, if there's 150,000 people that have died with COVID, 120,000 so far are excess, that means 30,000 probably right off the top are just normal deaths that happen to have COVID that passed away for whatever cause. So what you're referring to, Ethical Skeptic on Twitter, a guy that he's very mysterious. He's a data guy. I think he's worked with the government before, maybe even worked in the government before. He's kind of mysterious in that regard. But he's calculated that an estimated net lockdown deaths of 40,000, meaning when you take away all the deaths prevented from accident, fewer accidents happening, but then add in all the deaths that happened because of the lockdowns, another 40,000 people have died than normal. If that's true, then what I'm looking at is I'm subtracting 40,000 from the 120,000 excess, and that leaves us with potentially somewhere in the neighborhood of 80,000 people actually dying from COVID above normal. Those are people that are actually had the disease and passed away from it, as opposed to just passing away from something else and happened to have the disease at the time they passed away.
Right. And this is so important, because I've talked to some other colleagues of yours, I should say peers of yours. Dr. Andy Bostom is, we talked to him a lot, Andy. He is a academic MD. He'd been an internist. He started studying this for the same reason. He's been studying epidemiology as an academic MD, became very interested in epidemiology. So he started to see some of the inconsistencies in numbers. And we have talked about this dynamic that occurs in states like Texas, where literally, Kyle Amps with us, data analyst, podcaster, numbers geek, literally people go into a hospital and they've got a sprained ankle. Or, you know, say they go in with a fever, right? It's just not going away. If they get coded as COVID, the hospital gets more money. And so they have this economic incentive to do that. Then in the case of a sprained ankle or a sports injury, you could go in with a really bad knee. You're going to be in there for a couple of days. If you have COVID, like if you even had it, so you could have had it 3 months ago. We know the virus is active in the body for, 7 to 9 days or 6 to 7 days, and then it's no longer active. It can no longer infect others. You've had it at some point. That gets coded as with COVID. So now that's a case. That's not even a death. If you were to be in the hospital with a car crash, but you had COVID and you end up dying, that's recorded as a COVID death. From a perspective in numbers, how, Kyle, do you even screen out what's real when they're coding that? How do you do that?
It's really tough. And that's why we have to look at excess deaths, because it's just like you hear these numbers, 150,000 people have died from COVID, and most people just take that at face value. Like, well, wow, that, you know, that's a shocking number. But when you tell them it's almost half that, they don't believe it. It's like, and you have to try to explain what's happening. And you mentioned the hospital scenario. That's why hospitalizations right now are a little tricky to follow, because everybody that goes in for any reason, like you said, the Rhode Island Health Department director actually used the sprained ankle scenario. And everybody's like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would you go in for a sprained ankle? It's like, well, she used the scenario. So we're just kind of reciting that. But if you go in for appendicitis and you happen to test positive while you're there, because you are, all inpatients are being tested when they're in the hospital right now. So if you have appendicitis, you're there for something else, you test positive for COVID, you become a COVID hospitalization. And that's the same thing that's happening with deaths. If you die with COVID, you're being counted as for COVID. And that's happening with hospitalizations and on the death certificates. And so you're right. It's very, very tough to follow. And we don't have enough transparency in the data right now. So we have to look at things like excess deaths to try to get an idea. And these things eventually will clarify themselves in a year or two from now. We'll have all the data in, and we'll, I think, be able to go back and say, look how ridiculous the coding was on this. Like, this was overinflated by, what, 50%, 60%, whatever the number. We'll find that out eventually.
Well, and yeah, and we'll find that out, though, long after we've been pushed into a, well, not we, because I'm not going to be taking it, a vaccine that statistically, what, 99% of us don't need. We'll be talked into that. We'll be talked into, you know, have that data after the elections, et cetera. I also wanted to talk with you about this phenomenon of data stacking and death harvesting. To me, Kyle, this is the most disturbing. Kyle Lamb is with us, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's KLAM8. Or is it, what's your Twitter handle?
KYLAM8.
KYLAM8 on Twitter, absolute must follow. KYLAM8 on Twitter, absolute must follow. This data stacking that you've called out, Ethical Skeptic has called out, Justin has called out, Dr. Andrew Bossom has called out. Of course, Alex Berenson, former New York Times reporter, is all over this data stacking. This is a phenomena where the CDC, and it's much more prevalent with state health authorities and the COVID tracking project. The Atlantic Magazine's COVID tracking project is a sick joke, where they're going back and taking deaths that happened 4 to 8 weeks ago and then stacking them into today. Is that done with any ethics in any other form of data?
Not that I'm aware of. And, you know, you mentioned the reason you mentioned earlier with the hospitalizations, like hospitals being paid more. I think that's playing a role, too. And I'm not saying that that's the only reason or the primary reason. But I know this, that they're in another reporting date. Like, they, August 3rd, I think, was the next reporting date where the hospitals go back to the government and say, this is how many COVID hospitalizations we've had. And that's going to affect the payouts for a lot of CARES Act payments for Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP. There are a whole different, there are like six different programs. And so if you have all these deaths that occurred in this period, reporting period, I think you can go back and say, well, they were hospitalized for COVID. And so that counts in the reporting, and I think that's one of the reasons why these numbers are being elevated. It may not be the only reason, may not be the primary reason, but I think that's part of it, too.
No, and I think that's true. And then there's also then this bizarre comparison in our media coverage of this, and this just drives me crazy, is the refusal to admit that herd immunity has worked in Sweden. I mean, you've studied these numbers, Kyle. I've talked about this ad nauseum, but from a numbers perspective, is there any doubt in your mind that Sweden has reached herd immunity and that's worked? And what does the data say about this?
Yeah, Sweden is an interesting example because they are one of the clear, like last night I posted a bunch of graphs of daily new cases, and I'm trying to show that there's a seasonal pattern throughout the world. It's hitting different latitudes and different longitudes at different periods of time. So I took a bunch of countries and grouped them together just to show similar patterns based on where you're at on the globe. And the Nordic countries are interesting because Sweden actually does stick out as a very, very different case curve than Norway, Denmark, and Finland. And I think that probably has to do with the fact that they didn't lock down. They took their medicine. They let it spread. They were careful and try to protect the high risk. And I think they've even said, you know, we probably could have done a better job of that, but they let it spread. And I think that there is absolutely a clear downward slope to the point where they probably are reaching herd immunity, where if there is a true second wave, and some people are saying, well, there's one now, and I don't agree with that, but if there is a second wave this fall or early in the spring, I think Sweden is going to come out of this okay, and we're going to find out, hey, they did it right in the first place because they took their medicine, they went for herd immunity, and they found it, and the rest of us, because we locked down, we didn't reach whatever the threshold is for herd immunity. And now we're still trying to find it and may have to be subjected to a second wave. And I'm not saying a second wave is coming, by the way, but I'm just saying in that hypothetical, Sweden will come out on top if that happens.
Yeah, and this is what I've read about in terms of herd immunity, is it's between 10 and 20% of the population. What that means is there's 10 to 20% fewer places that the virus can live. It needs a live host to live. It can't live past 30 seconds or so on hard surfaces. The hotter the weather gets, the less likely it is to continue to live. That's why we've seen these seasonal cycles with this virus and other influenza-type viruses, and we've observed that. So as we close this out with Kyle Lamb on Twitter, I've noticed now that there's sort of changing messages. And some of the messages are very, very disturbing to me. The message now I'm seeing from some of Team Obama and Team Apocalypse, and I think Tony Fauci floated this weekend, is I think Fauci wants another round of shutdowns. And I've seen Obama's former health czar saying we need to do a 6-week, 95% lockdown, ban on interstate travel, only 5% of the economy operating, people in growing foods, in farms, etc., shut down. The government will get you food in your house. That disturbs the heck out of me. Do you see anything, Kyle, in any of the data that you've observed that supports a second shutdown at that level?
Absolutely not. And I can tell you many of the countries that shut down the first time have actually said they won't do it again. Like Norway, their prime minister came out and she said that this was a mistake. If this happens again, we will not shut down because of the extraordinary loss in life and property and business. And she has said it was a mistake. India has apologized. The UK has said that they won't do a massive lockdown again if this comes about. I think a lot of countries learned their lesson. And that's because the data just doesn't support it. They've realized the effects that the lockdowns cause with deaths, overdoses, suicide, how many businesses are going out of business right now here and bankruptcy. It's just not working. It didn't stop it. At best, it delayed the inevitable. So yeah, there is no data, in my opinion, that supports a lockdown whatsoever.
Well, it's been sure a pleasure to have you on. I appreciate what you've done in taking this incredible skill you have with math and numbers and applying it this way. And how can people go subscribe to your podcast?
Yeah, you can go by looking for Beyond the Fold. It is a new podcast. I've had a couple episodes where I discuss COVID-related matters. It is on SoundCloud. It's also on Apple iTunes. It is on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and a bunch of your third-party favorite apps.
Got it. Beyond the Fold. Kyle Lamb's been with us. K-Y-L-A-M-B 8. K-Y Lamb on Twitter. I'll continue to follow you, sir. Thanks for your service to the country in this way and using your skills. Good luck with the podcast, and we'll have you back on, Kyle. Thanks very much.
Sounds great. Thanks, Todd.
All right. Todd Herman Show will continue on AM 770 KTTH. Thanks for listening to the Todd Herman Show again. Kyle Lamb's Twitter is KYLamb8 at Twitter. Absolute must follow. You now know more in that segment. You now know more than people who have read the Seattle Times for 6 months about the COVID. Let's get into
just a few more things.
It's a quick arrangement of news-like items laid out into a logical, numbered fashion. First, we start in
thing one.
This guy got the nickname. It's a mean nickname. It's mean. Sumo Antifa. Listen very closely to the bragging this guy makes as he is screaming at the pro-police demonstrators, folks who do not want the police budget cut by 50%. Speaking of percentages, I'm not sure this dude says here what this dude thinks dude is saying.
I'm in the top 99% percentile of intelligent people on this planet.
Wait, you're in the top 99% of intelligent people. Got it. So you are somewhere within the... that's pretty gorgeous. Next up in just a few
thing
more minutes.
Two.
Speaking of really smart people, man, brilliance. Believe it or not, this lady is a possible VP pick for Biden. Well, the people who run Joe Biden. And she insists she didn't know communism in Cuba was that bad 4 years ago, but She also admitted, by the way, earlier, to being part of a radical group that trained American militants in communist Cuba. Gee, I wonder if any of those communist militants she trained in Cuba are back in the United States trying to bomb police stations in Seattle.
Shouldn't you have known by then that Castro's death was not a great loss to the Cuban people?
I absolutely would have not put that statement out. And I will tell you that after talking to my colleagues who represent the state of Florida, raised those concerns with me, lesson learned, would not do that again.
So now she knows that a mass murdering communist who also partnered with Che Guevara to kill people, gay people, because they were gay, and black people because they were black, that was a bad thing. Sounds like a Seinfeld thing. Was that wrong? Because if someone had told me that was wrong, I never would have done that. Got it. Thanks very much, Karen Bass. Next up in just a few more things.
Thing three.
On MSNBC, they found an expert. You never want to ignore the experts. This expert, Brian Williams, founds. He sees something going on in Portland you and I might not see.
I mean, the question is, does the land of the free need a KGB? I would say the answer is no. The United States of America does not need a secret police. We do not need a police force which appears without insignia, which doesn't identify itself, and which pulls random people off the street.
I agree. It's a good thing that never happened, ever. But we do have a secret court that was lied to by the Democrats to try to unseat a sitting president. But the thing in Portland, what he described, that never happened. And that's really good. Next up in just a few minutes.
Thing four.
That tiny little dude, Brian Stelter, on CNN, is talking to the Biden National Security Secretary. And it has a really strong suggestion for VP Biden, the basement dweller.
So the idea that Biden can't do an interview is a lie. That's a lie by Trump. But he's going to keep lying. He's going to keep saying it for three more months. So why not prove him wrong every day by having daily press conferences and giving daily interviews?
Why indeed? Why indeed?
Could someone tell me the difference between a spoon and a nuclear bomb?
Someone make Biden stop talking? Last up in just a few more
Thing
things.
Thing five.
Jim Clyburn, Democratic representative.
I feel very strongly that this man has taken on a strong arm tactics. And I feel very strongly that he is Mussolini, Putin is Hitler. I said that back then, and I believe that.
Yeah, the signs of that are he'll get back to us with the signs of all that. More Seattle Spirits. Todd Herman Show continues.